SFMSports.net. On air, online, mobile, on demand.
And welcome to another episode of It's College Football. Joe Miller, Pete Medhurst joining you as we preview the ACC. Pete, how are you today?
Doing great. Can't wait till these become week-by-week previews. We've got games to break down, though.
Almost there.
Almost there. And Cal and Hawaii playing in Australia as we get ready to tape this preview of the Atlantic Coast Conference. An early prediction, Joe, on Cal-Hawaii in Australia, of all places.
I think Cal's the better team. I found it interesting that Cal had to ship a goalpost there because they couldn't find a goalpost in Australia. And then I guess second and foremost, I guess the other part is how important is it to actually have a goalpost to practice with? Well, outside of the kickers.
Yeah, I mean, if you have at least one, I mean, you could at least send the kickers down to that end. But I almost wonder sometimes, because this game is going to start at 10 o'clock Eastern time when it does eventually go on. Is that too early for Hawaii? And is it too early for the bettors who love betting Hawaii in the post-midnight kickoffs that usually accompany the rainbows?
Yeah, that's your get-back last-chance saloon, Hawaii football, for some people. So there's a lot of experts out there on Hawaii football. By the way, how's your shredded wheat diet going?
Shredded wheat diet is going great. I have it for breakfast in dry form, and then at night in with milk in dinner form.
You alerted me to the fact that I've never heard of a shredded wheat diet before, but good luck on that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was a guy that used to drink 4 and 5 sodas a day, so now I have one in the morning. That's it for the day. I'm drinking water and other products.
You're drinking a soda right now.
But that's because I have to. I got a long day ahead here. But it's one at the beginning of the day, a shredded wheat for breakfast and for dinner, and so far we're down 3 pounds, so hopefully we can keep it up.
All right, good luck to you on that. Let's take a look at the ACC. We'll start in the Coastal, and we'll start from the back forward. And let's start with the Virginia Cavaliers, 4-8 last season. Their last bowl game, 2011 Chick-fil-A Bowl. New head coach, obviously that's the first thing that grabs you here, Bracco Mendenhall. Were you surprised when they named Bracco Mendenhall their head coach?
First of all, I was stunned that Bracco Mendenhall would leave Brigham Young, but he clearly, I mean, let's face it, Joe, let's give Kyle Whittingham and the folks at Utah credit. BYU had clearly become the number two in the state of Utah right now. Not by much, but a clear number two. So for him to actually leave there was a bit of a surprise. Give Craig Littlepage a lot of credit. I think an athletic director with some things going on in his athletic department that was maybe a little bit under fire from some of the alumni in Charlottesville. And I think at least in terms of the name on the surface here, knocked it out of the park with the hire. Bracco Mendenhall's resume speaks for itself. Now, question is, the league that he comes into, can he get the Cavaliers up and running? He's always seemingly been able to find a quarterback and develop quarterbacks, Joe. And this has been one of the programs in the ACC that, let's face it, has probably been as challenged as any in terms of finding consistent quarterback play. And it's the one thing that's held them back from success.
Mendenhall spent 12 years at BYU. He's a defensive guy. He's going to run the defense at Virginia. You mentioned the quarterback situation. It looks like they have named the Kurt Benkert from the transfer from East Carolina as their starting quarterback, a guy that didn't play much at East Carolina. He's named their starting quarterback. They had Matt Johns coming back, a senior who threw for nearly 3,000 yards, 20 touchdowns, but 17 interceptions last year. Real quick on Mendenhall, though, too. I think big reason that he's here in Virginia is money. And let's not, you know, he's getting paid a pretty good salary and obviously higher than what was being offered at BYU. So that's a big part of why he is here, too. He brings over his offensive coordinator from BYU. And I guess the question is, with Benkert getting the start at quarterback, what is this offense going to look like? They have a very good running back. Mizell, probably a better receiver than running back. He was a big-time recruit for them. It was a big get for them. He's had a good career. 75 catches last year for him coming out of the backfield. Third team ACC last year. Albert Reed, who's a transfer from Maryland, also in the backfield there. But what is this offense going to look like at Virginia?
It's a great question. I liken Mizell to kind of like a Matt Forte, a guy that can give you quality on the ground, as well as the offensive line is going to give him at just over 4 yards a carry a year ago. But as you mentioned, though, Joe, a dual threat, a guy that can both give it to you on the ground and also catch the football. So he makes a unique weapon. I mean, it all comes down to the quarterback play. And if Bankert is able to come in after really, as you mentioned, not having played a ton at East Carolina, beats the guys out that are already here who have actually already played, in many cases taken more snaps. This is an interesting situation for Bronco Mendenhall right away. And again, whenever there's a new coach hired, there is a certain grace period, and they're going to need it this year because outside of opening with a good FCS team in Richmond, that's no picnic in that opening game. At Oregon and at UConn are going to be two very tough games where the Cavaliers are going to be clear underdogs probably in both of those games.
And Mendenhall's got his work cut out on the defensive side. When you look at last year, gave up 32 points per
brutal.
Game. Couldn't stop anybody on the ground. Allowed 5.3 yards per attempt in the first half of games, putting them behind the eight ball. They struggled versus the run against Louisville and against North Carolina. If you look at those two games, they're just gutted by the running attacks of those two teams. Now, granted, they're very good running teams, but he's got his work cut out on the defensive side. As you mentioned, you know, early on at Oregon, it's going to be a test right off in week two for them.
The good news is Brady Hoke says they're no good on defense either, so you might be able to score some points out there against the Ducks as well.
But three of the first five on the road, but breaking in a new quarterback, a new head coach, and granted, there's not going to be a ton of expectations for this Virginia team.
Big culture shock, though, between Salt Lake City, Provo area, and Charlottesville, Virginia. It's going to be interesting to see how Mendenhall makes the adjustment there. But, Joe, I mean, if you can't stop anybody, you're just not going to win football games. Mike London was a guy that, you know, obviously had defensive pedigree there and you know, couldn't find enough talent to stop people. They've got a bunch of new starters up front on the defensive line, which doesn't help you either. You do have good returners at the linebacker spot, some guys with experience, a guy at free safety in Quinn Blanding who's a good player. But, Joe, this is a program hasn't made a bowl game since 11 and, you know, has not had a lot of success at all the last 4 years. And it's going to take a while, I think, to find it even more in what I think is a pretty tough ACC right now.
I will say that, and we can have a debate separately about how much recruiting rankings mean, but London did bring in some guys that were highly thought of, and they just have not developed there. So you do wonder if there's some hidden talent there that Mendenhall can get out of these guys. So 4-8 last season, I think similar numbers, and maybe you can get to 5 wins for Virginia this season. Let's look at Duke, 8-5 last season. They won in the Pinstripe Bowl over Indiana 44-41. It was their first bowl victory since the 1960 Cotton Bowl. David Cutcliffe has really built this program now to a point where in his ninth year, there are some expectations for this Duke team. The tough thing for them, they averaged 31.5 points per game. They've averaged over 30 points per game 4 straight seasons, but they have an injury issue at quarterback Thomas Cirk, who is their returning starter. He blew out his Achilles in the offseason. Now, he's returned to practice, but the expectations, it's only been 7 months since he blew it, his Achilles, is he's not going to be ready early in the season. And a question mark, if he's not ready early, do they keep him out for the entire year, get him back? They've got Parker Baim, who played some last year for them at quarterback. They've got a couple freshmen competing for the quarterback job. But I think it's an interesting situation there with Cirk and how healthy he is, and do they force him into the lineup early on in the season?
And they've had to slow him down here in this past week of camp as well, because they, you know, they don't want him to push that Achilles too far right now. The one thing, it's a redeeming quality we talk about with good offensive coordinators around the country. The teams that consistently find good quarterback play, it's because their coaches consistently know how to coach them. David Cutcliffe is one of those few in that special class, Joe, of people who know how to find quarterbacks, going all the way back, obviously, to Peyton Manning, who he made famous at Tennessee. But if there's anybody that's going to have a quarterback ready to play, it's David Cutcliffe. And that offense has really become, because it's so diverse. And I think that's what's that was not the package he ran with Peyton Manning at Tennessee. It's a completely different package now. And it's because of the versatility of the quarterbacks that he's had at Duke. He's done a marvelous job developing a package that has been very, very explosive. And, you know, right now, back seven is decent on defense. So if this is a team that if they can find their way to the mid 20s most games, they're still going to have a chance to be bowl eligible again and continue this great run of success they've had under David Cutcliffe.
Yes, sir. The quarterback also ran for 800 yards. And when you look at this rushing attack, and we've been around this Duke team, you know, for the last 10, 12 years, we were down there a couple years ago. The biggest difference, what they've been able to do the last 4 or 5 years, Pete, is to develop a running game. They used to have a great passing game and could never run the ball. They didn't even try to run the ball. They just said, we can't run the ball. We're not even going to try. They've changed that. They averaged 4.8 yards per carry last season. That was one of their best marks in a long, long time at Duke. So they've established some sort of running game, and it helps with Cirque in there. But that, to me, is what Cutcliffe – early on, he got some better players in there. They developed some of their offensive philosophies. But what they've been able to do is become multidimensional on the offensive side of the football field, and that's why they're winning games.
And the question will become, you know, from a standpoint of turnovers, here's where you have to watch. Because, you know, if they go with the junior Bama quarterback and then Sean Wilson, a junior at running back, he gets more workload now. Last year had just under 100 carries, did average 5 yards per carry. He's got some good returners on the offensive line. So they've got the groundwork up front that you need to still be productive. The question is, with guys getting more experience now, being asked to carry more of the load, do they put themselves in position for turnover city? And I think that's the thing that you've got to watch out for right now if indeed Cirque cannot go here at the start of the season.
Yeah, schedule, they open up with North Carolina Central, then play Wake Forest at home before two straight on the road at Northwestern and at Notre Dame.
Might as well just stay in the state of Indiana or stay in Chicago there for 2 weeks.
So they'll, you know, be obviously favorites in their first two, then underdogs of their next two before coming back home for Virginia and Army. So I would think 4-2 is at least what they would expect out of that start.
And I think Northwestern's a 50-50 game on the road, quite frankly, with what Northwestern has replacing to come back. And if you're going to play them, you're going to be able to get them in September on the road, I think, because they're going to be a much better team later in the year under Pat Fitzgerald. So I think if you're Duke, best time to play Northwestern is early in the season.
Now on to Georgia Tech, a coaching staff we're very familiar with. 3-9 last season, Pete, and I'm not even sure what went wrong for them last year. It's an interesting question. You look at Justin Thomas, and coming into last season, Pete, I think some people considered him a dark horse Heisman Trophy candidate. And he struggled big time. In 2014, he ran for 77 yards a game. He dropped down to 40 yards a game last year. Even his passing numbers dropped down last year. This is a team, Paul Johnson, in his ninth year at Georgia Tech, where I don't know if you can have really any sort of justified expectation for them this season off of a 3-9 campaign that was clearly a disappointment for Georgia Tech.
They lost so many close games last year, Joe. Lost by a touchdown to Notre Dame. Lost by a touchdown to North Carolina. Lost by 3 to Pittsburgh. Lost by 6 to Virginia. Lost to Georgia by 6. I mean, their season could have been completely different had it worked out a different way. So, from that standpoint, you know, they've got to find a way to make one more play a game, basically what it comes down to. And I think because of Thomas's regression last year, only completed 41% of his passes, Joe. I mean, we know option quarterbacks in the past. We've seen this offense run. They're not Peyton Manning, but they've also not been that bad in terms of completion percentage. You've got to do better than that, and we'll see if Thomas can rise back to the occasion, because again, this was a Tech club that was in a lot of football games and very easily could have been 8-4 when you look at it with just one more play made in many of those games.
Paul Johnson in his career has been very much a plug-and-play guy as far as offensive line was concerned. They struggled last year. You know, 5.3 yards per carry sounds great, but when you look at the years in the past, it wasn't that great for him. They allowed 15 sacks, which is sometimes a death nail to option drive if you have a couple sacks in there. Their turnover ratio was -7. It was the worst since 2004. All things that we know Paul Johnson has a major issue with is sacks and turning the ball over and putting the ball on the ground.
Got a good group of A-backs coming back. Those are the guys out on the wing and you know, Marcus Marshall, obviously a sophomore this year, going to get more of the run now.
Yeah, he's the first freshman for Georgia Tech under Paul Johnson at the B-back spot to go over 500 yards rushing. So they've gone traditionally.
And there have been some good ones for him in that offense.
They've traditionally gone with some experience at that position, but I think he looks like he's got some things that you can say, big picture, they can latch onto over the next couple of years. Ted Roof back for his fourth year as the defensive coordinator there. Not bad numbers last year, but they only got 14 sacks last season, and that's a big part of their defense. They have to get a little bit more pressure on the quarterback. When you look at their schedule this season, Pete, they open up with a crazy game in Dublin against Boston College, in a game that, to me, is, when you add in Dublin to the equation, it's a complete and utter toss-up.
First 1-17 wins, because last year BC couldn't score. I mean, BC was not terrible defensively. They just couldn't score. So, in my mind, first 1-17 wins that game with the added Dublin factor. Then they go FCS against Mercer, Vanderbilt. It's a 50-50 game because it's in Atlanta. So they got a chance. They got a chance to be 3-0 when Clemson and Miami greet you back-to-back. But again, games are in Atlanta. That Clemson game is a quick turnaround, 5 days after Vanderbilt, but it is at home.
Yeah, and outside of going into Ireland, they don't play out of state until October.
Right. So, you know, again, I mean, that's if you're gonna vie for the
big prize. Boston College and Georgia Tech playing the week after playing in Dublin.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
just crazy. I mean, that's we did that trip.
Yep.
I mean, that's a long
trip.
That
surprised me that both teams were playing the week after.
Well, that's why they're playing Mercer after, though, we should point out as well.
Let's take a look at the Pitt Panthers last year. We saw them in the bowl game at the United States Naval Academy at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium, a 44-28 loss to the Midshipmen, 8-5 under Pat Narduzzi in his second year. Nathan Peterman returns as quarterback for them. And James Conner, great story. Looks like he's ready to go after his cancer treatment. He teams up with Quadri Olison there in the backfield. Olison ran for 1,100 yards. Conner, the year before sitting out last year, nearly ran for 1,800 yards. It's as good a 1-2 backfield combo as you'll find
in the
ACC.
Conner was also taking some snaps in the spring as a wide receiver as well, so maybe they try to expand his skill set a little bit there with the Panthers. Two terrific, terrific players. Peterman, not a terrible quarterback. Not a guy that's going to get you killed an awful lot. I liked what Pat Narduzzi
did. He's a system college quarterback.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he's a guy solid.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. You can do a lot of you can do a lot of business with guys like that, especially when you have the likes of Olison and Conner. It makes their life much easier. I liked what Pat Narduzzi did last year with this program, albeit the bowl game. In some ways outclassed by Navy, which was the surprising factor in that game. But I think this is a guy in Pat Narduzzi that's got this program going right away. And, obviously playing for the Pennsylvania State Championship right out of the gate. But then two huge games at Oklahoma State and at North Carolina for the Panthers' overall resume. And if they aspire to be where Narduzzi was when he was part of that Michigan State staff, these are games that you got to find a way to win here early in the campaign. I think they have the people to do it. They got a lot of people returning on defense, Joe, and I think that's the critical thing for the Panthers. Got to find a little bit more consistent play on the defensive side of the football against higher quality competition. They did okay against the mediocre groups last year. They handled them, but it's how you do against the teams with a little more firepower, like an Oklahoma State and North Carolina, that you're going to see in weeks 3 and 4.
Interesting stat for them on the defensive side, and this, when you look at their season, I think plays out. When they were unable to get to the quarterback, they struggled as a defense, and their five losses last year, they averaged just a sack a game, and their 8 wins, they averaged 4 sacks a game. So they didn't seem like they had a plan B when they couldn't get to the quarterback to stopping teams. But as you mentioned, they do return 8 guys on the defensive side of the field, and 3 defensive linemen that are arguably 3 of the best out of 10 or 12 in the ACC. Ewan Price, 12 sacks last year. Tyreek Jarrett, big nose tackle, 6'3", 335. So they've got the size up front. Offensively, Peterman back, Allison Connor, the running backs, receiver, they had to replace Tyler Boyd. New offense coordinator Matt Canada in his first year comes over from NC State, where he was the offense coordinator for the three previous years. We talked about the running back U of Pitt. Since 2000, Pete, nine seasons, since 2007, nine seasons, Pitt has had a running back over 1,000 yards, seven out of those nine seasons. And that will continue this year. I guarantee you, between Ellison and Connor, one of those guys will
go. And remember, they're going to have to replace the production of Tyler Boyd, who's just a man-child at the wide receiver spot. The guy to watch on this roster, future pro of big-time proportions in my mind, Jordan Whitehead. Yep. Just absolutely phenomenal as a freshman last year at the strong safety spot. This is a guy that's got, I think, high-class football player written all over him. And if they are going to get better on defense, he has to now take that next step into being an even bigger playmaker for that defense in the back end.
You mentioned before the Battle of Pennsylvania. That's a very intriguing week two matchup with Penn State. They haven't played since 2000. Pitt won that last time 12-0. Narduzzi 3-2 at Michigan State as the defensive coordinator against Penn State. That with games at Oklahoma State and at North Carolina, as you mentioned before, that's a crucial matchup for Pitt week two.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think Pitt's probably in a better place, quite frankly, and with that game being at home. But again, it's good to see those two teams playing each other. Those were great rivalries in the 70s and 80s when those two teams played, because they were always great. Johnny Majors versus Joe Paterno, those games were always great. And it's great to see those two schools back on the field playing each other again.
Virginia Tech 7-6 last season, won a crazy Independence Bowl over to Tulsa 55-52. New head coach Justin Fuente coming over from Memphis. Head coach at Memphis from 2012 to 2015, overall record 26-23. Not indicative what he was able to accomplish at Memphis the last 2 years as head coach of the Tigers. But, Pete, this is a massive change. No more Frank Beamer with Virginia Tech and Justin Fuente in. And I think the first and most obvious question is, how quick will it take for Virginia Tech to become Memphis's offense?
That's a great question. Jerod Evans got the nod as the starting quarterback from Fuente. They've got, in my mind, some terrific skill people led by Isaiah Ford, obviously, at one of the wide receiver spots. He's a first-team, all-conference caliber player. They've got a couple of guys on the offensive line back, which helps. Bucky Hodges.
Yeah.
Bucky Hodges is that utility guy. He's not just a tight end. He's a guy that can run routes down the field. He can stretch the field and put your linebackers in a bad spot in terms of matchups. I think that's got Fuente licking his chops, having, skill people like that. But as I've discussed with a couple of the Virginia Tech beat writers over the past couple of weeks, the question is how fast can they make that transition from Beamer ball and to where it's Justin Fuente's team? How many times on Monday nights can he go to Bull and Bones for the coach's show and have to hear, especially if he loses a game, Coach Beamer would have done this on that possession in the third quarter. I think the biggest thing that helps here, my biggest criticism of Frank Beamer over the last 4 years, the reason why they went from a double-digit win program to a 7-8 win program over the last 4 years, Frank's hiring of his offensive staff. It was not Bud Foster on the defensive side of the football. You knew what you had there. You had one of the best coordinators in the country. Bringing in Scott Loeffler the last couple of years, a guy that's not been a proven commodity, been a very mediocre assistant everywhere he's been. Now he's at Boston College, of all places, or a team that had no offense. Now they've got a coordinator who hasn't produced consistently. I think that alone, Joe, is going to be the biggest and maybe most positive shift for this Virginia Tech program, is having an offensive mind there that's going to be creative. It's going to get a lot out of all the skill people that it has. And I think you're going to see an increased production from the Hokies on the offensive side.
Yeah, and you mentioned Evans getting the nod, JUCO product. That's a transition that he's going to have to make to this next level. He was certainly the fan's favorite, because you're always the fan of the unknown a little bit in this situation. But I would almost be shocked if we didn't see Brendan Motley at some point, a guy that played a little bit last year for Virginia Tech. If Evans can come in and make that transition and make it a smooth transition, then this is a Virginia Tech, as you mentioned, they've got the skill guys to be a 30-point offense. It's just about the guy directing the offense for them. I just think he's going to struggle early on. Maybe by October he gets, you know, things straightened away. But I would expect to see both Evans and Motley at some point.
Junior college football is such a crapshoot. You just have no idea.
You play two teams that are probably good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just have no idea what you're up against. Otherwise, it's glorified 7-on-7 football in many cases. But what I think you overlook is, overall, the Hokies have 15 starters coming back, including a couple of not included in that, you know, some good specialist guy in Joey Sly, strong in the kicking game for them. So I don't have any reason to believe that this Tech team can't contend again in the Coastal. The Coastal division seemingly is consistently wide open, but we're going to know early because they play Tennessee in the Battle of Bristol. They play North Carolina, second week of October. So we're going to know within the first few weeks of the season just exactly what Justin Fuente has, because he's going to have to play his cards right out of the gate.
As you mentioned, Bud Foster back for his 22nd year, but they were a defense that struggled last year, gave up 26.3 points per game, most since 1987 at Virginia Tech, and they gave up 4.6 yards per carry. That's very unlike Virginia Tech
defensively. And you know what, Joe? You know what they did? They made, for one of the rare times under Bud Foster, they made self-destructive types of mistakes in terms of penalties at just terrible times. Roughing the passer penalties, late hits, things of that nature. I mean, one game, Big Daddy Nicholas lost his mind out there on the field and got a key 15-yard penalty. You know you're going to be in close football games almost every game in the Coastal Division. If you give teams free 15, 10 yards at a time, you're just going to hurt your ball club at that point. And those were the things that this Tech team had not done in the past and really had a lot of self-inflicted wounds on defense last year that has to be cleaned up for them to get back to where they once were on defense.
And I do think it's a little interesting to watch here with Foster back, 22 years there. You mentioned before playing part of Beamer ball. Fuente did not want to disconnect with that on the defensive side, but I do wonder about that relationship. You've got guys that certainly want to win here, but Foster's from another era coming in for Fuente. I think if things go well, then there's no issues there, but if there's a struggle on the defensive side, at what point does Fuente say, hey, we need to address some things when you've got Bud Foster there, the incumbent there who's been there forever with the cachet that he has?
I agree, and I think here's what happens. Obviously, you know, Bud's got a contract too as part of this. You know, you let Bud Foster do his thing without a lot of meddling off the top. If it starts to go in a negative direction, then if you're Justin Fuente, then you start to maybe impart some ideas into what's going on. I mean, the relationship is going to go on unless Bud Foster leaves on his own accord, for right now, at least contractually. But if things don't go well early in the season, then maybe Justin Fuente says, hey, here's some things that I'm seeing on tape. You know, what do you think about this? And, you know, you start to, but because as a head coach, you've got to answer to your boss first, and that's the fans, your AD, and the people coming into Lane Stadium every week to watch you play.
Now on to North Carolina, 11-3 last season. I'm still trying to figure out how they lost to South Carolina in the first game of last season.
None of us could figure that out.
Watch the game.
That's the one thing is the season went along. Every week you would see on Twitter, people would remark, how in the world did this team lose to South Carolina?
Mitch Trubisky, who put up some great numbers in blowout situations last year. You can't beat 85% completion percentage, 555 yards, 6 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions. But still, tough to replace a Marquise Williams, who 4,020 total yards for North Carolina last year. Trubisky, you saw some good things that you like from him last season. Great receiving core, great receiving core. Mac Hollins, Ryan Switzer, Bug Howard, Austin Prohl, good running back. Elijah Hood, third in the conference last year, 1,400 yards rushing, 17 touchdowns, all ACC performer last season. Four guys back on the offensive line. Everybody comes back but Marquise Williams, but Trubisky, we talked about this a little bit in the SEC preview with that opener against Georgia, two quarterbacks there trying to establish themselves, and they averaged 40 points per game last year, Pete. If Trubisky is good, I don't see that dropping off very much.
No, and you know what happened in that South Carolina game, Joe? They gave up 4 sacks in that game, and had one of their lower outputs in terms of total offense for the season. The rest of the season, in fact, for the next 6 weeks, they didn't give up four. It took 6 weeks to get four sacks against North Carolina's offense. So they cleaned that up immediately. Larry Fedora, I mean, we saw him, you know, in person at Southern Miss, put 63 on Navy in their building. And we know offensively that he's got clubs and he knows what he's doing with those. I mean, this Carolina team's got everything, Joe, but if they somehow win both of those games right out of the gate, if they win those first two games right out of the gate, Joe, they become one of those teams that you start talking about as a potential, I wouldn't say national title contender right away, but you do start putting them in the conversation, you know, with Florida State and Clemson and Louisville, who a lot of people are very high on over in the Atlantic Division as well, as a potential ACC champion and a team we're watching play in one of the big money bowl games at the end of the season.
Now, on the defensive side, statistically, they improved 15 points per game from
staggering
2014
difference.
To 2015. Gene Chizik in his second year only allowed 24.5 points per game. They returned seven guys, but I would say the one thing that defensively they struggled with, you especially go back to that the bowl game against Baylor. Baylor didn't have a guy that could throw the football. Literally did not have a guy that could throw the football, and they still ran roughshod over North Carolina, even though you knew what Baylor was going to do. A couple of times last year, you would see them just struggle to stop anybody running the football, and that is still a concern for me when you head into this season for them. And also when you talk about on this side of the ACC, when you've got Pitt, when you've got Georgia Tech, when you've got Virginia Tech, teams that want to establish the run, I do worry about them on the defensive side. And then also, you, by the way, you play Florida State, too, with maybe the best running back in the country. So that's where my concern.
And Georgia with Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel.
So that's my concern defensively, if they can stop the run. If they can't, they're going to be in a lot of games like they were with Baylor in the bowl game.
Ironically, Joe, 7 of the 14 last year, they gave up under 20 points. And if somehow they could do that again, they're going to be right there. But again, we'll know right away about this team with Georgia and then the road test at Illinois right out of the gate. We'll find out a lot about the Heels in the first 2 weeks of the season.
A third new head coach we're talking about at Miami, it's Mark Richt, a very well-known name. Georgia head coach from 2001 to 2015, won 145 games there, went 80-16 at home as head coach of Georgia Tech. They returned 9 on the offensive side of the football field. New offense and defensive coordinators, Manny Diaz, the defensive coordinator, Thomas Brown, the offensive coordinator, and they return maybe the number one pro-style quarterback in all of college football, Brad Kaya. Hasn't put up flashy numbers per se, 61%. 3,000 yards passing, 16 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 13 all-ACC last year. Very good numbers. I think Kaya, who came in and played as a freshman, had some high expectations. You've seen him sort of progress through his career to the fact that, you know, he's gotten rid of some of those nagging interceptions that he would throw early in the season and has turned into a really good quarterback for Miami. And now with the tutelage with Mark Richt, I think people are starting to think maybe the sky's the limit for this kid.
I think offensively, with the way Al Golden played, I think, I don't want to say Kaya's hands were tied, but I think Kaya's going to be allowed or asked to do a lot more. I mean, Joe, they got 9 of 11 starters back. I mean, this is a Miami team that is ready to go right away for Mark Richt here at Miami. And, you know, you've got your offensive line back. You've got, you know, Joseph Yearby, a guy that, you know, certainly can run the pill. You've got all the offensive weapons to do some damage here with this Miami team. And, you know, if Kaya continues to climb the ladder of improvement each year, we should see big things from him this season.
Maybe this is a little nitpicking, but you know me. I like to go inside the numbers. 3 of his 5 interceptions inside the red zone. And on third down last season, just 49% completion rating on third down last season. He was the 92nd rated quarterback in all of college football on third down. I think that if I'm the head coach, that concerns me a little bit.
I mean, look, when we talked to Buddy Green for years as the defensive coordinator at Navy, it's the one thing he constantly talked about. You've got to do business on third down, whether it's offensively or defensively. To keep drives going, you got to make plays on third down. And if you're making mistakes on third down, you're breaking down the whole thing because your defense has to come back on the field. They don't get necessarily the break. The one thing that was interesting about this team, and I don't put this on Al Golden, I put it on the players. When they lost last year, Joe, they lost.
Yeah.
I mean, 59-21 to North Carolina, 58-0 to Clemson. So when they went downhill, they went downhill. And, you know, I just think that this Miami team has too much talent, and I think they're going to enjoy. I think they fought Al Golden. I don't think there's any question about that. They fought him. The alumni fought him. I think they are sky high that Mark Richt is the coach with that SEC pedigree coming to Miami. I think this club has a chance to be really, really good, especially on the offensive side of the football.
Yeah, defense is going to be questioned. We mentioned Diaz coming in. They allowed 28
every
points
year,
per game.
Isn't Manny Diaz being hired somewhere every year, it seems like?
Mississippi State last year, Louisiana Tech the year before, Texas the three previous years. So
Dad was the mayor of Miami,
yes.
So maybe he'll stick here for a while.
They allowed 5.3 yards per carry, which was the worst in school history last year. 5.3 yards per carry, the worst ever for Miami. Schedule's a little bit of a mixed bag. Explain to me why Miami decided to play at Appalachian State.
Maybe Al Golden had relatives there. I don't know. What possibly could have happened is maybe somebody bailed on Miami in a contract at the last minute, and this was about the best thing that they could come up with. Maybe Appalachian State promised some of the gate to come there because, you know, a lot of people obviously would show up for that game. But, I mean, look, we're not going to know anything about Miami until October 1st.
Yeah, they play.
I mean, let's face it.
Yeah, October 1st at Georgia Tech, then back-to-back home games against Florida State in North Carolina. After that, they got 4 out of 5 on the road, 2 Blacksburg, then out to Notre Dame, sandwiched in between road games at Virginia and at North Carolina State is Pittsburgh. So, but, you know, looking at the new stadium last night, watching the Dolphins game, looks fantastic.
But is anybody going to show up on Saturday? Nobody shows up on Sunday, so is anybody going to show up on Saturday?
They put fewer seats in. They took some seats
out. That
was
smart.
So we'll see how it goes, but it looked fantastic. On to the Atlantic side of the ACC. We'll start with Syracuse, 4-8 last year. New head coach there as well. Our fourth new head coach in the ACC. Dino Babers coming over from Bowling Green the last two seasons. Before that, a head coach at Eastern Illinois in 2012 and 2013. They returned 16 starters combined, offense and defense, for Syracuse. But, you know, Pete, this is a program. This is a university, a football program that just needs somebody to stick around. They need a direction. They've had now 5 different coaches since 2004.
It's not good.
They have to stick with somebody and let them try to have some success here.
Not good in a Power 5 league. You got to have some continuity at some point. They haven't tasted really victory since 13 when they had a good run there in 12 and 13 back-to-back bowl appearances there. But, you know, here's my thing on Dino Babers. You know, not everybody that has left the MAC has been Gary Pinkel, who left Toledo to Missouri and had good success. There have been a lot of MAC stories here of late where guys have left the MAC and gone on to Power 5 schools and been complete flaming disasters. I think Dino Babers is a different guy. I think he's a guy that is going to find some success here. The question is, with so many coming back on offense, can he get it going right away? Because, Joe, he's going to have to, because after they play Colgate, who is top team in the Patriot League to start the year, so they're an FCS playoff contender. Louisville, South Florida, Connecticut, and Notre Dame. 4 teams all expected to contend in their division or in their league as a pretty high-profile opponent. So you're looking at the possibility of being 1-4 heading to Wake Forest on October the 8th, and Lord knows where your team is at that point. With a new coach, you're looking at 1-4. Everybody's going, man, this is just like last year, you know. So somewhere along the way there. Now, granted, those Louisville and South Florida games are at home, but that's a really, really wicked stretch to get started with for Syracuse.
it's Syracuse, not to be the old guy here screaming about what Syracuse used to be, but they always used to have running backs and wide receivers traditionally. And they just haven't had those guys, and you do question what they have at each of those positions. This year, Eric Dungy back at quarterback, battling there for the starting spot as well. The knock on Dino Babers would be you had Jimmy Garoppolo at Eastern Illinois for your 2 years as head coach. I'm blanking on the Bowling Green quarterback's name. Last name Johnson, I think.
Matt Johnson, yeah.
Excellent quarterback the last 2 years.
But, dude, they had a stable of wide receivers a mile long.
So the knock on Babers would be, can you do it without a top guy quarterback? But, you know, defense.
So Dungy did. I mean, Dungy did complete nearly 60% of his passes last year. So you've got a guy that at least has shown some pedigree and a clue as to what he's doing with the football. Now, can you get more out of him is the question.
It's an interesting team because they have so many guys coming back, but they were so bad on both sides of the ball last year. You would think 4 or 5 wins might be the ceiling for them again this season.
And you're depending on some key spots, sophomores. You know, Dungy's a sophomore. Dante Strickland's a sophomore. Defensive side, Cordell Hudson, and one of the cornerbacks is a sophomore. Offensive line, Aaron Roberts is a sophomore. So not only do you inherit a club that needs to learn how to win, but you're inheriting a young club as it is. Those are going to be tough recipes with that schedule early in the season for the Orange.
Wake Forest 3-9 last year. Dave Clawson in his third year, 6-18 overall. 9 guys back on offense.
What's
7
the
guys
theme here, Joe?
That's another MAC head coach. 9 return on offense, 7 return on defense, and going through my notes for Wake Forest, I don't even know what to say about this team, Pete. In some regards. Is there progression here? Do they do anything well? I don't know. They don't run the ball well. They don't throw the ball well. Defensively, they're okay, but nobody stands out to me. They're just a team that's there.
A team. Now, again, and we know it can be done at Wake. Jim Grobe did a hell of a job there. They've got 9 guys coming back on the offensive side. John Wolford, now a junior at the quarterback spot. You know, can he, you know, continue his progression? Completed 61% of his passes last year, but they've got to get more out of their offense. I mean,
they've got to run the football.
Struggled mightily to get the 20 points outside of the Elon contest last year. Tyler Belt, you know, a sophomore. Here we go with young guys again at the skill positions. You know, can he bring more to the running game? As a freshman last year, just under 500 yards, but only, as you mentioned, only 3.5 yards per carry. That's going to be a punt every 3 plays.
Well, this is too. You look at it, you can't run the ball. So what does that mean? It means third and long situations, and they've given up 88 sacks combined the last 2 years.
I mean, that's terrible. That's a terrible recipe for a team that, you know, struggles on defense. Outside of Zeke Rodney at nose tackle, not a lot of great size coming back on the defensive side, and but they've got 7 guys returning from a year ago, like Brad Watson in the secondary there for them. They've just got to find more people. It's really that simple as it pertains to them. But 50-50 game at home Thursday night right out of the shoot against Tulane, who's got a new staff as well. You know, Duke, Delaware, and then a Big Ten clash with Indiana. So there are some opportunities at least to get some confidence going early in the season here for Wake Forest.
Yeah, Clawson, when you look, just 1-7 at home in ACC conference games at Wake Forest. Now on to NC State, 7-6 for Dave Dornan, another
Another MAC guy.
In his fourth year with the Wolfpack. You know, 33 points per game last year, really good for them. They've got to figure out their quarterback situation. New offensive coordinator there, Eli Drinkwitz, in his first year, moves over from Boise State. I was looking at a local report on their quarterback battle, and Dave Dornan, early on the season, he said, we're going to play 2 guys. So Ryan Finley's going to play. Jalen McClendon, who's a sophomore, a pretty high recruit. Finley's a transfer from Boise State. Good running game. Good guys on the skill position for them. Matthew Days, a little bit of a down season last year, but a guy that can get to that 1,000-yard mark, third team ACC last year. Braylon Sherry, pretty good receiver for them. I guess the first thing that catches you, though, is they're going to play with 2 quarterbacks, and generally, usually, is not a good thing
for
them.
If you have two, it means what?
You don't have one.
That's correct, sir. I mean, and let's face it, they've got to replace it. I mean, you had a guy like Jacoby Brissett, who terrific player, and they went 7-6 a year ago. So, I mean, now you're backing up and starting over again at a key position.
And to that point, you average 33 points per game, and you go 7-5. I don't know if you can expect them to get to 33 points per game. So where do you find those extra wins if you're not getting to 33 points per game?
Yeah, I mean, and it's up to guys like Kentavious Street up front, Bradley Chubb. Those guys have got to set the tone for them. They do have eight guys back on defense, so there's got to be some improvement on that side of the ball if they're going to make any headway. Not the hardest schedule out of the box with William & Mary, East Carolina at Old Dominion, though, because it's NC State, they are going to be loaded for bear in Greenville on September the 10th.
They lost two straight to East Carolina.
Right.
So, and three of the last four in Raleigh, they've lost to East Carolina.
Dude, our man Ruffin McNeil did such a good job against the ACC schools and still gets run out of town.
Offensive line going to be concerned. They only returned two. They gave up 39 sacks last year, which was 119th in the country, and that was with a mobile quarterback in Brissett back there. So a concern there. Schedules you mentioned, not too bad. They do have back-to-back games at Clemson and at Louisville in mid-October.
In contrast, outside of the Boston College game, who had no offense, they couldn't sack the quarterback either, and that's where, again, they've got to do something to get a little bit more pressure on the quarterback.
2012, the last time they won two straight ACC home games.
Wow. Which hasn't been hard to do in this league. I mean, quite frankly, the league depth has not been great, but you would have thought with some of the talent that they've had over the last few years, they've been able to pull that off.
The most inconsistent of the inconsistent teams.
They were always the team you expected to jump in. You was going to jump into that 9 or 10 win club.
You know, one week they lose to Wake Forest and then come back and beat Florida State.
Right.
I mean, that's the kind of lull they've been in, really, over the last 5-6 years. Boston College, 3-9 last year. Steve Adazio in his fourth year with the Eagles. They return 8 on offense. As you mentioned before, Scott Loeffler moves over from Virginia Tech offensive coordinator to the offensive coordinator at Boston College. Patrick Tolles, Kentucky transfer. Now, Tolles did not have the greatest of seasons last year, 14 interceptions to 9 touchdowns. But to be honest with you, anybody that can throw the football seemingly over 15 yards would be an improvement for them at Boston College. Really, really, really struggled to get the ball forward. They only averaged 17.2 points per game last year. Their passing percentage as a team was 44%, and that's a non-option team that was 44% passing. So they need some improvement at the quarterback position.
Couldn't run the ball either, Joe, and that leads you to trying to throw. They gave up 8 sacks against Louisville, 7 against NC State. So, again, my question is, defensively, I don't think this team is going to be bad. And I think Steve Adazio is a good defensive guy. You look at their numbers from last year, points per game, not bad at all for Boston College in a lot of games because their defense was really good. The problem is if you take the 76-point game out against Howard, they are woeful offensively. I mean, this is a team that struggled in some cases to make double digits. Never after the 76 points they scored against Howard, they never scored 17, more than 17 in a game the rest of the year. I mean, you can't win in a Power 5 league averaging 17 points a game.
It was their worst point production since 1995 for Boston College. You mentioned defensively, 15.3 points per game. That was fourth best in the country for Boston College. New defensive coordinator in. Still very talented on the defensive side. Excellent against the run. They held opponents, 5 different opponents, under 75 yards team rushing and allowed just 6 rushing touchdowns all season. Might be a tough task to ask that similar production this year, but with Tolles at quarterback, you would expect some uptick in offense. We mentioned before that ACC opener against Georgia Tech in Dublin, and then back-to-back road games. They actually go on the road after coming back from Dublin. Now, it's not a long road game. They play in Gillette Stadium against UMass, but at UMass, at Virginia Tech, then home against Wagner and Buffalo. That is a weird first 5 games of the season for Boston College. And of those 5 games, Pete, I think you would have to expect 3-2 out of that, and maybe if things go well in Dublin, 4-1 out of that.
Could be. Keep an eye on Connor Strachan, middle linebacker, terrific football player for Boston College there.
Yeah, 11 tackles for a loss last season. You look at their defensive stats, a lot of impressive guys for...
You should win more than three games with the defense they had last year under Don Brown.
They gave up 15 points a game.
Unbelievable.
And they won three games.
That might be the most mind-numbing
that's
statistic.
That's like a stat from like 1961. No.
Right. I mean, that's one of the most mind-numbing statistics I have found from college football last year. That's insane.
Now to one of the darlings of the country right now, Louisville, 8-5 last season. Bobby Petrino in his third year back, seventh year overall. They return a lot of starters, 9 on offense and 8 on defense. New offensive coordinator, even though Petrino will be the guy that calls most of the plays. And really, Pete, when you talk about Louisville, I think you start with Lamar Jackson, their quarterback, because he is a lightning rod of some sorts, because I think a lot of people look at him and say, oh, freshman, last year had some big games running the football. The question is, can he become a complete quarterback? And I think he does need to become that. If Louisville is going to beat Clemson and Florida State, he has to be a more productive passer for them. But I think people see the talent there, and then they jump to the conclusion that this is a team that could contend for an ACC title.
I think obviously they think it could contend because Jackson as a freshman really did a lot of good things that opened your eyes. They've got defensive guys, though, coming back that you're going to need to beat the Florida States and beat the Clemsons. And I think that's one of the reasons why people may lean in that direction, is that that group may be a little bit better. I think... You know, I'm not one of these guys that likes to draw a ton of comparisons, but Lamar Jackson, you know, with that ability to run the football, becoming as good a dual threat guy as there might be out there for his freshman year at 55%, threw more touchdowns than interceptions. There's a lot to build on with him there, and also having Brandon Radcliffe back in the backfield as well to go with him. There's a lot for Bobby Petrino to build on with that group overall. So I think that's why people have said, you know what, hey, it's easy for us to sit here and pick Florida State and Clemson, but this Louisville team could be a problem. The problem for them is at Clemson, October the 1st. You're going to have to go on the road and win that game. And, oh, by the way, 2 weeks before that, you're playing Florida State. So we're going to know if Louisville's that darling 5 games into the season.
Here's the good and bad on Jackson as far as throwing the football. 20 of 47 in his last 2 games against Kentucky and A&M in the bowl game. Now, he did run for 412 yards in those 2 games, but the passing game was not there. But if you want to point to one example where he had a lot of success as a passer, his best passing day was against Florida State. He went 20 for 35 for 307 yards and 3 touchdowns and 1 interceptions. They have a dramatic split when you look at their offense. In their 8 wins last year, Pete, they averaged 225 yards rushing. In their 5 losses, they averaged just 85 yards rushing. So when they have struggled to run the football, they haven't had a lot of success.
And that's when Jackson had to try and win the game for them with his arm last year. And that's where a freshman quarterback usually runs into trouble.
Todd Grantham in his third year. This is a defense that gets after you. Devontae Fields, great freshman year at TCU. Transferred 11 sacks last year for Louisville. They return 8 on the defensive side. Keith Kelsey, their senior inside linebacker, had 107 tackles for them last season. 9 tackles for a loss. First team all ACC. 3 guys back on the secondary. So there's a lot coming back.
See, and that's why I think there's a lot to like about, and this is why people think Louisville could be that surprise team, because everybody is so focused on Florida State and Clemson and not looking really at anybody else. That's the one team that might be able to throw a monkey wrench into this Atlantic division.
And you mentioned they play Florida State September 17th, Clemson October 1st. They have a bye after that Clemson game, and it does really open up for them the rest of the way. The rest of the schedule in the second half, their toughest game is at Houston on a Thursday night in November. But you look at the Florida State game last year, they allowed 510 yards against the Seminoles in that game last year. Not much better last year against Clemson as well. So that, to me, as you mentioned, that Florida State game, that's going to be, you know, a big game for them on September 17th. They control their own destiny of how well they're going to play this year, because they've got the two teams in front of them that they're chasing down in the ACC.
And let's face it, they're getting Florida State at an opportune time early in the season, especially with the injury to Sean McGuire here in camp for Florida State.
Clemson 14-1, 45-40 loss in the championship game in the college football title game last year. Dabo Swinney back for his ninth year. Kind of hard to imagine he's been there for 9 years. 46-6 at home is Dabo, 75-27 overall. 8 guys back on offense, just 4 on defense. But, Pete, the conversation with Clemson starts with Deshaun Watson, 68% completion percentage last year, 4,000 yards, 35 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. The one thing I love about Deshaun Watson, when you look at his numbers and you think 68% passer, oh, well, you know, that's not that big of a deal. You know, maybe he's throwing a lot of short patterns, but this was a big play offense. 40% of his completions last year went for over 15 yards. This is a offense that is stacked at running back, stacked at wide receiver. You won't get me to say a bad thing about Deshaun Watson. I think he's maybe the best player in college football. He's certainly the best quarterback. I thought headed into that Alabama game last year in the championship game that he was probably the best player on the field in that game, and that's a big thing to say. I'm a huge believer in Deshaun Watson. My concern is if he gets injured outside of that. He was a first-team All-American last year. I don't see any drop-off for him this season.
Well, I mean, I think, again, I know he doesn't like being referred to as a dual-threat quarterback. He's referred to that because, in addition to throwing for 4,100 yards, he also ran for over 1,100 yards.
Just over 5,000 yards.
Thank you. So from that standpoint, the statement is accurate. I think the young man's could be a bona fide great pro as well. I think he's got the measurables. I think he's got the arm. I think he's got the moxie, because that's what he showed us. I didn't care what he did at anything in the regular season all last year, Joe. Didn't care about anything. Show me against Oklahoma and Alabama, two of the best in the country in big games. And he just blew out Oklahoma and had his team right in there throwing haymakers with Alabama until the end of the game in the college football championship game. That's what I wanted to see from Deshaun Watson. I don't care what you did in the regular season against your ACC teams and Wofford and Appalachian State early in the campaign. Show me what you're going to do against Oklahoma and Alabama. And he stepped right into the ring and put on a show in both of those games. I think he's hungry, Joe. I think there's going to be hunger there from losing that Alabama game. That's why I like this Clemson team so much. They not only, have that hunger, they bring back 8 on offense. And I think that's important, Joe, because they lost a lot of defensive talent. Yeah. So they are going to have to outscore a few more people even more this year until they get some of those guys on defense up to speed.
They return 4 guys that were highly productive receivers. They add in Mike Williams, who was injured last year. He went over 1,000 yards receiving in 2014.
Wide receiver you.
Yeah, I mean, they have legit 5 wide receivers. Gallman back at running back. He ran for over 1,500 yards. They have the number one running back recruit in the country as well. Very good tight end in Jordan Leggett. I mean, the sky's the limit for them offensively. They average 38 points per game. I would think this year, I think 40 is legit consideration for them. But as you mentioned, defense is going to be the area where you look at and say if there's an issue there, it's on the defensive side of the football field. And I think especially in the secondary, Pete, they only return 1 defensive back that started last year. They lose some guys back there. The sack numbers, I would expect that to be a little bit down. They got 48 last season.
They had 10 in the 2 playoff games against Oklahoma and Alabama.
And a lot of those sacks have gone via graduation. They do have a lot of talented guys. My concern is the secondary people. When I look at the schedule and I say, their concern is the defensive backfield. Where's the quarterback that's going to carve them up on their schedule, though? You tell me where that quarterback is, because it's not there.
I mean, maybe Louisville October 1st, you have a chance if, as we mentioned, if they can make the necessary improvements to take that next step. But I'm with you. You're absolutely right. Because Lord knows what Florida State's quarterback situation is going to look like on October 29th when you get to that point. So I mean, yeah. I mean, I think that that's a great point that you make there is who's going to be that quarterback that's going to carve them up. The type of offense that could do it is in the opener, quite frankly, with Auburn. But we have no idea what the Tigers are going to look like here in the opening week of the season.
I just don't see Auburn being able to stop Clemson for more than three or four trips.
Right. No, that's right.
And I just don't know if Auburn's going
to... It's a Clemson team that's going to have to beat itself, even in its toughest game, which is on the road at Florida State. They get Louisville in Death Valley. But, you know, they've got the best player in college football. And until somebody goes in there and beats him in the regular season, I've got them pegged to the college football playoff again.
At Georgia Tech, home against Louisville, that back-to-back game, that could be an issue where you have some concern. But other than that...
Well, your defensive line takes a beating the week before. I mean, we know that's the nature of playing against Georgia Tech. You know, so it'll be interesting to see how some of the more inexperienced players they have early in the season on the defensive line react in a situation like that Georgia Tech game.
Now on to Florida State, who's probably the co-favorite with Clemson. You mentioned the quarterback concerns there. They return technically 11 starters on offense, return a tremendous amount of talent. And of course, no player more talented than Dalvin Cook last year, 1,700 yards, or nearly 1,700 yards. He averaged 7.4 yards per carry. First team All-American, Pete, and he's as good as it gets as far as running backs are concerned. Good receiving core back, Travis Rudolph, Jesus Wilson, Kermit Whitfield. Offensive line returns all five starters. They averaged 32 points per game, which was their lowest since 2011. I expect that number... It's interesting. Sean McGuire, you mentioned, pretty solid year. They've got a big recruit in Malik Henry, a freshman who came in for spring last season, one of the top recruits there. As we talked about in the SEC, this is a team that sort of reminds me of a lot of the discussions we have there, is they're good, but how good is their quarterback?
I mean, that's really what it comes down to. What does DeAndre Francois here do early in the season with the injury to Sean McGuire? We know it's Francois here early in the campaign. And again, we'll find out right away, September 5th against Mississippi. That game is in Orlando on a Monday night. Quite frankly, I like Ole Miss going into that game.
Francois,
I think Ole Miss can outscore them. I don't think Ole Miss will stop Dalvin Cook, but I think Ole Miss could outscore them in this game because I think there are some issues defensively in that back six at linebacker as well for Florida State early in the season before you have a whole lot of tape that you can critique and get better at. Offensively, you know, Florida State's a downfield passing game. I mean, they had six guys last year that were in double figures in terms of average per catch. So, I mean, this is an offense that's going down the field when the quarterback wants to throw. They've got the offensive line back to protect the quarterback. The question is, can the quarterback deliver the ball on time and get it to the skilled people that they have? But you know what? We'll know. I mean, Florida State's going to know what kind of season they're going to have after 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, Mississippi and Louisville sandwiched with Charleston Southern in there. I mean, and South Florida's not going to be a gimme because you know South Florida's going to want to prove something. That game is at South Florida coming up on September 24th. So, I mean, we're going to know by the end of September where Florida State is. If somehow they're undefeated coming out of that stretch, my goodness, circle the wagons, baby, October 29th. You know what? We're in South Florida the day before that. Maybe we can just tell everybody we'll drive back and we'll stop in Tallahassee and watch that game.
By the way, Florida State 11-1 in ACC play against Clemson. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what? You know what? I mean, Jimbo Fisher has done a hell of a job. I mean, 12, 14, 13, and 10 have been the win totals for them over the last 4 years in a state where recruiting is so huge. You're going up against so many clubs for the talent, plus the SEC teams coming into your state to raid the talent out of. I mean, this has been... I mean, Bobby Bowden set the standard, obviously, for several years, but my God, this program has been so good for so long. Right now, the question is, how do they come out of the gate September 5th? If they win that game and Francois plays well early, then I think this even cosmetically takes a different tact in how we look at Florida State. But, I mean, my goodness, Florida State, Clemson, I mean, you're talking about two of the best clubs and two of the best coach teams, I think, in the country.
Yeah, extra note for that Labor Day night matchup. Florida State's lost their last four neutral games. So.
Well, they don't play away from home very often. I mean, the only time they really play away from home is when they play out, you know, in their league. So I give
and
Jimbo
some of those
Fisher,
have been sold back to,
right,
to neutral
right. And I give Jimbo Fisher a lot of credit going on the road to South Florida to play a game. A lot of coaches in his position wouldn't do that. he's not afraid to take his team down there and go play a game against the Willie Taggart team. It's going to be pretty good.
And now this plays into the success that they've had recently, but you look at their games, their key games, they're 14-2 all time against Louisville. They've won six straight against Miami. I mentioned 11-1 against Clemson, and they've won three straight and five out of the last six against Florida. So their schedule, when you look at their competition that steps up, they've had a lot of recent success against all those teams for Florida State.
Yeah, but you know what? They got rolled by my boys from Houston in that bowl game. And that's going to be interesting to see how that defense plays. Their defense
they're not
is
elite.
Be,
I think they're good, but I wouldn't put them as an elite defensive unit.
Right. I think they're elite offensively, but they're definitely not elite, at least at the start here, defensively. And with Mississippi, Louisville, and USF, three of the first four, then North Carolina, October the 1st, which could be no picnic, Miami on October 8th, which is on the road, which could be no picnic. If Jimbo Fisher is 5-1 or 6-0 after that stretch, then back up the Brinks truck for that October 29th game against Clemson, where, by the way, should note, they have a bye week leading up to that game, which so does Clemson as well. So we have 2 weeks of hype for that.
Prediction time. Coastal, to me, when you look at overall, Pete, every team has a question mark on the Coastal side. My lean is going to be to North Carolina. I still have my concern about the defense, stopping the run, Trubisky, but North Carolina is my pick on the Coastal side. I think Miami and North Carolina, that is going to be the two top teams. There's part of me that wants to say Georgia Tech could be a surprise team on the Coastal side. On the Atlantic side, it's Florida State or Clemson to me. I want to see more out of Lamar Jackson as a thrower to prove it to me. I like Clemson on the Atlantic side. I have to go back to North Carolina on the Coastal side.
You know me, I love Fuente, but I think he's going to need a year to get to that top class in the ACC over on the Coastal side. But I don't think he's as far away as you think, especially if the JUCO quarterback can get the job done. I'm going to go a little off the path here. I think Pat Narduzzi in Pittsburgh showed me enough last year where in year two, with the running situation that they have coming back here, I think this is a team that's going to play ball control a little bit, and I think they're going to frustrate some people with it. It's going to be a very physical team, and I'm going to go off the beaten path here and take Pitt on the Coastal side. I really like what Pat Narduzzi did in year one. I think it's going to be even better here in year number two. In what I think is a wide open, as you mentioned, every team's got warts in the Coastal, and I think Pitt is going to find a way to win some close games.
I would not be surprised in the Coastal if we're here at the end of the season and either Miami, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Pitt, or Georgia Tech on the Coastal. I would not be surprised.
No, I mean, I think you could legitimately go six deep there with the right breakdown of games. If somebody slips at home or somebody goes on the road and wins a game you don't expect, any one of those six teams, I think Virginia's going to need some time to get and join that group. I don't think there's a whole lot of difference, quite frankly, between Duke and North Carolina when you look at these six teams in a row. And I think that's the one thing, as you looked around the country, the opinions on all six of those teams have all been drastically different around the country, though. Carolina's explosiveness is what has led people to really lean that way. And there's nothing wrong with that. I just think that there's an opportunity here for Pitt with Olesen, and great to see James Conner back from cancer. And I think this is going to be a Pitt team that's going to be really hungry with the success they had last year and ready to take that next step.
You got Clemson on the other side?
Yeah, Deshaun Watson's the man until somebody proves he's not the man. Though, again, you look at Florida State differently in my mind if they beat Mississippi in that first game. I think Jimbo Fisher does a tremendous job, and I don't have any reason to believe his team's not going to be ready to play in those big early month showdowns. I mean, that's a heck of a schedule right away. I mean, Florida State doesn't have to play Mississippi and USF, yet they've chosen to do so there, and I think that's just sky's the limit for a Seminoles team if they can beat Mississippi in that first game. But, I mean, let's face it, until they beat Deshaun Watson, he's got to be the man.
So that'll wrap up our ACC preview. As always, well, no, I shouldn't say as always. You can now find us on iTunes. Search It's College Football. Download an episode. Tell us what you think. Review it. Subscribe. And you'll get all our action, all our previews. We've now accomplished three. getting set to do the AAC as well. And, of course, we'll have our Week 1 preview up next week as well as we actually get some games going here in the next couple
tremendous
of days.
Tremendous opening week of the season to look forward to coming up. And I think that's the beauty of it, Joe. We see so many bad games early in the season. A lot of people scheduled, you know, with a purpose now because they know a big out-of-conference win can propel you into the playoff conversation. And there's been a lot of teams willing to take that chance here early in the season.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on It's College Football.